In the dark shadows, in the white cold, fearlessly we search for knowledge new and old. We drink the strong spirits and read the ancient tomes. The order of the Abracast, we are the brave and the bold. The Abracast, occult, history, conspiracy, and violence.
It is an apprentice in the order of the Abracast who now wishes to receive more light by passing to the degree of the fellow craft. He is prepared, worthy, and well qualified, and he is vouched for. Let him enter in the name of the Lord and be received in due form. Hey, John here. Hey, way before the invention of yoga pants, can we just take a second here to ask God to bless the eternal soul of that motherfucker who invented yoga pants and the motherfucker who marketed yoga pants? May they be blessed by the master of the ages upon the ages, amen, and all of that stuff. And if you're not praising these men or women, whoever did this, you've never been hungover at 6 o'clock in the morning on a treadmill at LA Fitness. I mean, holy shit, like that whole workout, the whole yoga space has those, that whole glass wall. I mean, you'll stay on that fucking treadmill for the whole class. What was I saying? Oh, yeah. Before the ancient times, before there were yoga pants, yoga wasn't just a hip way to kind of stay in fit. It was a serious, and I've actually tried this while I was recording these four episodes. It's a very uncomfortable practice of ways to expand your mind and train you to meditate. So, let's get into Crowley's magnum opus, Liber 4, with 1, 2, 3, 4 exclusive episodes, all on the first section of Liber 4, or Liber ABA. This is 194 minutes. That's like over 3 hours and 15 minutes of content exclusively on subscribestar.com/Abracast. All this and many more exclusive episodes are available on the Fellow Craft tier. The Fellow Craft tier just means it's only $3. It's $3 a month, dude. And you get tons of other stuff. So, like I said, that's subscribestar.com/Abracast. Check out this preview. If you were to ask your man of science for this theory of the real, he would tell you that there is ether, which cannot be perceived in any way by any of these senses or detected by any instruments, and which possesses a quality which are, to use ordinary language, impossible. Is very much more real than the chair he is sitting on. The chair is only one fact, and its existence is testified by one very fallible person. The ether is the necessary deduction from a millions of facts, which have been verified again and again and checked at every possible test of truth. There is therefore no a priori reason for rejecting anything on the ground that it is not directly perceived by the senses. To turn another point, one of our tests of truth is the vividness of the impression. An isolated event in the past of no greater importance may be forgotten, and if it be in some way recalled, one may find oneself asking, did I even dream that? Or did it really happen? What can never be forgotten is the catastrophic, the first death among the people that one loves, for example, who would never be forgotten. For the first time, no one would realize that one had perceived, merely known. Such an experience sometimes drives people insane. Men of science has been known to commit suicide when their pet theory has been shattered. Oh boy, we're gonna do a climate gate episode at some point in time. This problem has been discussed freely in science and Buddhism. Which you could find in Crowley, the collected works. Time, the Camel, and other papers. This much only need we say in this place that Diana has to be classed as the most vivid and catastrophic of all experiences. This will be confirmed by anyone who has been there. It is, then, difficult to overrate the value of such an experience has for the individual, especially as it is entire conception of things, including his most deep-seated conception, that standard to which has always referred everything, his own self, that has to overthrow. And when we try to explain it away as a hallucination, to temporary suspension of the faculties or something similar, we find ourselves unable to do so. You cannot argue with a flash of lightning that has knocked you down. Any mere theory is easy to upset. One can find flaws in the reasoning process. One can assume that premises are in some ways false. But in this case, if one attacks the evidence for Diana, the mind is staggered by the fact that all other experience attacked at the same lines will fail much more easily. In whatever way we examine it, the results will always be the same. Diana will be false, but if so, so is everything else. If so, so is everything else. Now the mind refuses to rest in a belief of unreality of its own experience. It may not be what it seems, but it may be something. And if ordinary life is something, how much more just that be by whose light ordinary life seems nothing. Ordinary man sees the falsity and disconnectedness and purposelessness of dreams. He ascribes them to a disordered mind. The philosopher looks upon waking life with similar contempt. And the person who has experienced Diana takes the same view, but not by mere pale intellectual conviction. Reasons, however cognate, never convince utterly, but this man in Diana has the same commonplace certainty that a man has on waking from a nightmare. I wasn't falling down 1,000 flights of stairs, it was just a bad dream. Similarly comes the reflection of the man whose experience of Diana. I am not that wretched insect, that imperceptible parasite of earth. It was only a bad dream. And as you could not convince the normal man that his nightmare was more real than his awakening, so you cannot convince the other that his Diana was a hallucination, even though he is only too well aware that he has fallen from that state into normal life. It is probably rare for a single experience to upset thus radically the whole conception of the universe. Just as sometimes the first moment of waking, there remains a half doubt as to whether dream or waking is real. But as one gains further experience, when Diana is no longer in shock, then the student has had plenty of time to make himself at home in the new world. This conviction will become absolute. Another rationalist consideration is this. The student has not been trying to excite the mind, but to calm it. Not to produce any one thought, but to exclude all thoughts, for there is no connection between the object of meditation and the dhyana. Why must we suppose a breaking down of the whole process, especially as the mind bears no subsequent traces of any interference, such as pain or fatigue? Surely this once, if never again, the Hindu image expressed in the simplest theory. The image is that of a lake unto which five glaciers move. These glaciers are senses. While the ice is breaking off consistently or constantly into the lake, the waters are troubled. If the glaciers are stopped, the surface becomes calm. But then, and only then, can it reflect unbroken the disk of the sun. The sun is the soul or God. We should, however, avoid these terms for the present on the account of their implications. Let us rather speak of the sun as some unknown thing whose presence has been masked by all things known and by the knower.
Learn more at theabracast.com. Get graphic elements, notes, worksheets and text versions of selected episodes, as well as access to the private Abracast workgroup by signing into the mailing list. Get all that plus exclusive episodes by supporting the show and becoming a subscriber at subscribestar.com.